This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, Dr. Leonard Broom, sociologist. Tonight's subject is the Negro American losing ground. You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Standing by in Austin, Texas is Dr. Leonard Broom, chairman of the sociology department at the University of Texas and a member of President Johnson's Domestic Affairs Group. Dr. Broom, in collaboration with Professor Norval Glenn, has authored a new and popularly written book on the American Negro entitled Transformation of the Negro American. If you'd like to ask Dr. Broom a question on tonight's topic, is the American Negro losing ground, or make a comment, give us a call here at Night Call. Our national Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. Our Night Call operators are on duty and our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here at Night Call. That's area code 313-846-6601. Dr. Broom, who and what kind of human being is the American Negro?
Well, it's a wild question, isn't it? On the face of it, he's a man like all of us. But I suppose that's fudging the answer. And we ought to say that he is a man beginning to discover his own potentialities, beginning to demand that he be treated like a man, like the rest of us. He is a man who has learned from the white man a lot of useless things which he, the Negro, is unlearning.
What do you mean, useless things that he's learned from the white man, Doctor?
Well, he's learned how to be subordinate, how to be categorically inferior, even when he's not. He's learned to act as if he didn't care. He's learned to suppress his own ambition. He's learned to hide his anxieties and his legitimate aspirations. Now he's unlearning these things. He's also learned from the white man, some most unfortunate things. He's learned something about violence, and recently he's begun to express what the white man has taught him about violence.
Well, now, why did the Negro learn these attitudes? You keep using the term learn. Why did he learn these things? Why did he learn not to care? Why did he learn not to have ambition?
He didn't learn not to care. He always cared. He learned not to show that he cared. And, of course, he learned this in the situation of several hundred years of slavery, when he was the absolute and categorical inferior of the white, and when he was at the when he was completely vulnerable to whites, and in the long period following slavery, when he was still tragically subordinated.
Now, whose fault is this?
Well, it has to be the white man's fault, doesn't it? Whatever the Negro is today, and he is, of course, very many things indeed. In very large part, he is what the white man has made him. The white man had complete control of him for several hundred years, almost complete control of him for many decades. And only now is the Negro beginning to have command of himself.
Well, what evaluation would the white man put on the Negro today? In other words, through white man's eyes, how does the average American see the Negro?
Gosh, it would be interesting to know, wouldn't it? We can guess that many white men are seeing Negroes for the first time. This is what Negroes mean when they talk about somebodyness.
What is that term?
Somebodyness.
And what does that mean?
That means the Negro feels that he is someone, a real person, someone recognized, not an invisible creature walking down the street.
And this is something that he's striving for, then?
Well, this is something that he has discovered that it's possible to be. Yes, he is striving to be somebody. What kind of a somebody he strives to be, of course, profoundly important for the Negro and for all Americans.
Dr. Broom, what would you say are the realities of Negro culture today?
Well, you've been cribbing from my book because we raise the question and we don't answer that particular question in a satisfactory way. We guess that there are some distinctive features that look like a somewhat separate culture of Negroes from whites. To the extent to which these are characteristics of poverty, it's hard to tell. But the important thing, standpoint of national policy, is that the common cultural property of Negroes and whites be enlarged, and that Negroes become much fuller participants in the total culture of the nation.
Well, now, Doctor, I'm having difficulty understanding what you're saying to me in this effect. What are these common areas, then? If it's difficult to pinpoint the things that are different about the Negro culture, because it is a wide culture, or the white culture, what things do we have in common?
Well, I suppose we have in common all of the aspirations and the values of the nation as a going concern. We also have in common all of the deviations, all of the negative features of the social order. Culture, of course, in a social scientific sense, is not made up simply of elegant, decorated, artistic elements, but it's made up of all the norms, values, and deviations from those norms and values. So if we're talking about aspiration, I suppose we must say that Negroes and whites share the Judeo-Christian ethic. Perhaps Negroes as a population are more religious, more actively participant than our whites. Certainly the evidence on Negro church membership would indicate this.
In your book, you commented about the early role of the Negro ministers, and that this was one of the few persons in a Negro group that would be allowed to speak up.
That's right.
The pastor. Is this why we see the kings today coming forward?
In a way, although it's an interesting question, because the number of Negro preachers has sharply declined in the last few years. Now, this decline is probably, we guess, we don't know, the passing from the scene of many of the old traditional Negro preachers, not very well educated, people who had other jobs than preaching, who were perhaps preachers only on Sundays, and who worked on farms, manual work, during the rest of the week.
Our guest tonight, Dr. Leonard Broom. Our topic is the American Negro losing ground. You're tuned to the Night Call Network. This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine,
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb. Hello again, Night People. Our topic on Night Call tonight is the American Negro losing ground. Our guest is Dr. Leonard Broom, who is the head of the sociology department at the University of Texas. And if you'd like to make a comment on the American Negro or express your opinion as to whether or not you feel he's losing ground or gaining ground, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, it's easy to call Night Call. All you have to do is pick up the old telephone and dial area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. Remember, you may reverse the charges if you wish. Our topic tonight is the American Negro losing ground. Dr. Broom, before we took our break, you were commenting about the role of the Negro minister and that it is changing today. Would you care to make further comment?
Well, I was observing that the Negro preacher of the old style, the Negro preacher that we call the accommodative type.
Is this the Uncle Tom type preacher?
Accommodative, yes. The one who is adaptive to the white man, who is always looking over his shoulder at the white man.
A puppet of the white man, then.
Hmm?
A puppet of the white man.
That dramatizes it, but maybe that's close to the mark. This preacher is passing from the scene, and we now have a far more highly educated group, a vigorous leadership, using the traditional medium of the Negro church, but using that medium now as an instrument for protest. The Negro church was there for a long time as a means for mobilizing the resources of the Negro population and the Negro community. Now, it is actually being mobilized by, I think, some of the most talented political leaders in the United States.
Well, do you feel that the Negro is actually making progress then today?
Yes. I think that the answer to the title question on this program is that the Negro is not losing ground. He's not falling behind, but he's not catching up very fast.
And is this because of the white man or the Negro himself?
This is because of the very heavy weight of a very long history in which the white man, by which we mean, of course, the whole society, did not discharge his responsibilities. What we're observing now is an attempt to mobilize resources at a level much greater than ever before, but still, in my opinion, an inadequate mobilization of resources.
Well, now, the Negro has been freed, technically, for over 100 years.
Yes.
Why did it take him so long to develop a power group, a group of people that could represent him?
Well, there are a number of reasons. For one thing, it wasn't safe. In many parts of the United States, for very many years after the end of the Civil War, that is, following that brief period of Reconstruction, the Negro changed, the status of the Negro changed very little. It wasn't judged to be in the interest of the white man to let him change very much. And it is only, I suppose, in the period following World War II, that fairly drastic changes occurred in the status of the Negro, although fairly significant changes did occur with the economic expansion accompanying World War I, which was the first major migration of Negro workers out of the rural South to the urban South and to the urban North.
This was after World War I.
World War I, and then again at a greater velocity, with much more force, during and after World War II.
Well, now, Doctor, the Negro is moving and obviously has leaders today. Will his elevation, in other words, the Negro finding his place in American society, will this automatically cause the loss of self-esteem in some white people, do you think?
Well, I suppose that there are some white people who have such a tenuous grasp on the real world and have such tender egos that somebody else's improvement must be damaging to them. But I think these people must be very easily hurt. It's important to recognize, I think, that there is not an absolute shortage of jobs in an expanding economy, so that if a Negro gets a better job, a white man must therefore lose that job and end up with a worse one.
Are Negroes getting better jobs today?
Yes, somewhat. In some areas, but at a fairly slow pace compared to the improvement of the total economy and compared to the occupational improvement of whites. My colleague Norval Glenn and I have made some guesses about this. And if we project the rate of improvement of Negroes, let's say, in professional occupations, at the rate that their professional status had been improving in the last 20 years. Now, that's a pretty short run, but for the fun of it, if we project that, it's going to be a very long time indeed, a matter of generations or even centuries before Negroes achieve equality, parity, in the field of the profession. Situation is not too much different in the managerial group. It's somewhat better in the group of sales workers, although still it would take several generations for them to achieve parity with whites.
Well, Doctor, I have a caller from Indianapolis, Indiana, standing by, a listener on WFBM, Miss Tanya Marcy. Good evening, Tanya. Will you speak right up? You're on Night Call.
Okay. I would like to ask a question. How is the white man to receive the Negro as an equal without the Negro response of winning special privileges above that of the white man, such as mass riots and things like this?
Doctor?
I just barely caught the question, but I think I got the sense of it. Am I correct that the question was, how can the Negro be expect to be treated as an equal if he indulges in violent behavior? Was that the tone?
Tanya?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it, Doctor.
Well, first of all, I tried to make the point at the outset that the Negro is, in a very real sense, a product of what the white man has taught him. We have to view these acts of violence as symptomatic of feelings of frustration and resentment which have been pent up for a long time. Now, we don't condone acts of violence just because we understand them. And we try to interpret these acts of violence against certain other acts of violence committed by white men. If we are going to judge white men by many decades of violence, of lynchings, and mass attacks, then it would be hard to admit that one did belong to a category called white men. I suggest that we try to view the violence, the riots, as symptoms of change, that we not condone them, that we insist that the Negro leadership and the Negro followership obey the law, but that we proceed with our attempts to improve the total society and to improve the status of Negroes at the very same time, and not be deflected, not be influenced by incidents, however damaging and however distressing they may be.
Tanya, did the doctor answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for calling Night Call. Miss Tanya Marcy from Indianapolis, Indiana, listener on WFBN. Let's go out to Baltimore, Maryland now, a listener on WBAL, Mr. Michael Nelson. Good evening, Michael. Your comment, please, sir.
I'd like to comment on the aspect the white man feels seeing the Negro for the first time. I'd like to know Dr. Broome's clarification on that.
Doctor?
I wish I could hear the question. It's very faint, and I couldn't get it.
His comment was to this effect, that earlier in the interview, we had talked about the white man seeing the Negro for the first time, and
yes,
he wanted some more clarification on that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for very many white men, and particularly in the North, the Negro was never a person. The Negro was a shadow figure walking down the street. He was nobody that the white man ever had to take into account. If the white man saw him at all, he saw him in public transportation systems. He saw him performing menial jobs in the background. Now, for the first time, many white men have had it forcefully brought to their attention that the Negro is a real person, that he exists, that he has problems, and that his problems are our problems. I wonder if that rephrases the proposition.
Michael?
Yes, that helps me a lot. Now, another thing, on the culture aspect of it, you said the Negro had a separate culture from the white man. And then you went as far as saying that he had a common culture as far as being religious. Would you clarify these statements, please?
Mm-hmm. I think I caught the gist of that.
Well, Doctor, could you hold your comments till we take our break?
Please do, Doctor. Thank you. Mike, will you hold on for just a few minutes, please?
All righty.
Our guest tonight is Dr. Leonard Broom. Our topic is the American Negro losing ground. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be.
Proceeding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb. Hello again, night people. Our guest tonight, Dr. Leonard Broom, and he has co-authored a rather interesting book on the American Negro entitled Transformation of the Negro American. And, of course, he wrote this book in collaboration with Professor Norval Glenn. And if you'd like to comment on tonight's topic, is the American Negro losing ground, please call us here at Night Call. We invite your comments. It's easy to call. Just dial area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make the call collect. Our night call number, area code 313-846-6601. Doctor, we had a caller on the line from Baltimore, Maryland, Mr. Michael Nelson, and I think he had another question for you. Michael, would you repeat that question, please?
Certainly. My question is, what is the difference in the Negro culture compared to the white man's culture, and why does the doctor feel that the Negro is more religious than the white person?
Doctor?
I didn't get the end of that question, I'm sorry.
He wanted to know why you felt that the Negro was more religious than the white person.
Well, I don't know for sure that he is more religious in the sense that he has a greater religious investment, although that may very well be. But the evidence is that the Negroes are more religiously active, more church-going, and there are more Negroes are actual religious members of religious faith than are whites. Now, the question of the Negro culture is an interesting one and I think fairly complicated, but perhaps I could answer it in this way. The African culture that the Negroes brought with them was just about completely eradicated during the period of slavery, so that there are very few remnants, if any, in North America of African survivals of African cultural forms. A kind of culture, a culture of slavery, grew up, and this was a very large part of Negro culture for many centuries of American life. Now the differences are diminishing, and we can look forward, I think, in the fairly near future to a period when there will be a national cultural property and Negroes will be very little distinguished from whites in this respect.
Michael, thank you for calling Night Call.
Right on.
Mr. Michael Nelson, a gentleman from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL. Let's go out now to Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLM, Mr. Bernie Donovic. Good evening, Bernie. Your comment, please.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Very faint. I would like to ask the doctor three questions, and I don't mean these facetiously. First of all,
could he talk louder?
Actually, what is or what constitutes a Negro?
Doctor, he wants to know what is a Negro.
Well, a Negro is a person who is defined as such by white men and by himself. Strictly speaking, he may have an infinitesimal amount of Negro ancestry. But if he is so defined, and if he so defines himself, he is a Negro. North Americans are very different from Latin Americans in this respect, and indeed from many peoples in Africa. In the West Indies, for example, people recognize a wide variety of gradations by color and do not have this categorical distinction of Negro and white that North Americans have.
Now, Bernie, your second question.
I wonder if the doctor knows why the white people might fear possibly 10 or 12 million Negroes in this country. And I believe a great deal of our problem stems from the fact that we do fear something or other.
Doctor?
I didn't get it. I'm sorry.
He wants to know why the white man fears 10 or 12,000, or a million rather, Negroes in America. And why is this fear? He feels that fear is a key word here.
Yes. I don't know how common fear is. I suppose it is present. Of course, there are many more than 10 or 12 million Negroes. Negroes amount to a shade more than 10% of our population. And that means that there are about 18 million plus. Nevertheless, the question of anxiety is a real one. This is compounded of many things. I suspect that there is a great deal of guilt in the white man's attitude toward the Negro. The white man feels the Negro hasn't had a fair deal for a very long time. And the white man says to himself, if he were treated as Negroes have been treated, he would be resentful and possibly violent. I don't think that the anxiety that whites feel is a consequence of Negro protest, except in a very short run, in passing phase. I think we have to look into ourselves. If we do have fear, to account for the existence of that fear.
And Bernie, your third question, sir.
My third one, very quickly. Has science proved or disproved equality of blacks and whites as far as abilities, intelligence, and...
Doctor?
Yes. I think that's a question that we can be fairly direct in answering. There are probably some differences in aptitudes between whites and Negroes. There is no evidence that the differences are of a size which would affect the ability of individuals to deal with the world in which we are all living.
Doctor, what does aptitude mean?
That's the ability to cope with real problems in a real world. Or to cope with book problems in a book world, or number problems in a number world.
Well, now, is this the Negro you say may have lesser?
No, I didn't say that. There may be differences.
Differences?
But there is no assurance that in these differences, Negroes would, in the long run, come out worse than whites.
Is this the same argument that we hear that you can't take an IQ test and give it to a child born in another culture if it was developed here in the United States?
Well, that's certainly true. A great deal of the early research on intelligence was based on a very narrow kind of verbal culture. The tests were developed on middle and upper class white children, and then we were surprised because lower class Negro children didn't do very well. As a matter of fact, lower class rural white children didn't do very well either. These were very bad tests indeed. As the tests improve, interestingly enough, so that we can factor out this these differences and get down to the essence of the attitude, the differences that are found decrease.
Bernie?
I think we can say confidently that if there are any differences in intelligence and aptitude and the like, they are not large enough in any direction to affect public policy or to exclude Negroes from certain kinds of activities or certain kinds of opportunities.
Bernie, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
All right, thank you very much for your time.
Good night, sir, Mr. Bernie Donovick from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLM. Now let's go to a listener who's listening on WFBM, but is down in, is that Tullahoma, Tennessee, Mr. William Corney. Good evening, Bill. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Good evening. I had a question for the doctor with regards to the Negro group called the Black Muslims. Now, I was wondering if this group really has any significant influence on the Negro community as a whole. I've read some of their literature, and they seem to imply that they're growing and that their influence is increasing throughout the Negro community as a whole. And I was wondering if the doctor thinks that this is really true, and if so, if the influence is great throughout the Negro community, if this is really hurting the Negro, or whether perhaps he might feel that it in some way is perhaps helping the Negro.
The Black Muslim movement, so-called, is one of a series of black nationalist-type movements that we have had in the United States for several decades, since actually before World War I. So it has to be viewed, first of all, in that particular context.
Would that be the Garvey movement?
Yes. Marcus Garvey, of course, was the most significant Negro nationalist, black nationalist leader until the Black Muslim movement. The Black Muslims, I think, may have grown significantly in the last several years, but it is my impression, and this is only an impression, that the growth of the movement has leveled out. Now, there are many people in the Negro community who are not affiliated with the Black Muslims, but are probably sympathetic to them. Even some Negro college students regard this strong, violently outspoken, violently aggressive movement as a proper thing, expressing the sentiments of many Negroes. Now, is this, insofar as the movement foments violence, it is categorically bad. However, we must recognize that this is a movement which has appealed to very poor, frequently criminal elements in the Negro population, and that one of the rules of the movement is that its members must not engage in deviant behavior, must not engage in drunkenness, drug addiction, prostitution, etc. In a way, therefore, although the white man tends to see only the the outspoken aggressiveness and the possible violence inherent in the black Muslim movement, there are benefits, very direct benefits, to its members.
Bill, did the doctor answer your question?
Yes, quite well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, for calling Night Call. Mr. William Corney, listener down in Tennessee, listening on WFBM out of Indianapolis.
Our guest tonight, Dr. Leonard Broom, an author and a sociologist. Our topic is the American Negro losing ground. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America. Busy America. Busy making money. Busy buying gadgets. Busy keeping up with the you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line?
Where do you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb. Hello again, and welcome to Night Call. Our topic tonight on Night Call is the American Negro losing ground. Our guest is Dr. Leonard Broom, and he has co-authored with Professor Norval Glenn a book called Transformation of the Negro American, a rather revealing book on the transformation of the American Negro. And it goes way back from the early days of the American Negro right up to the present. If you'd like to ask a question of the doctor or make a comment, give us a call here at our national Night Call number. That's area code 313-846-6601. Now, our lines are open and our Night Call duty operators are on, so let's give us a buzz here at area code 313-846-6601. I would also invite you that if you have some suggestions for future shows on Night Call or topics that you'd like to hear heard discussed, give us a call here at area code 313-846-6601, or better yet, drop a card to your station that you're listening to, and just drop a card to Night Call and put down the topic, and we'll see that your topic is used as soon as we can. Doctor, I have a caller now in Laramie, Wyoming, a Mr. Gary Einspar, and he's a student at the University of Wyoming. Gary, good evening. You're on Night Call.
Yes, sir. I'd like to ask the doctor about the present situation on the prejudice between the light and darker colored Negro, and how does this problem relate to the Negro's problem of adjusting to society?
That's a very sophisticated question. There are fads and fashions in colors. A few years ago, Negroes, I understand, regarded the lightest Negroes as the most attractive ones. More recently, so my Negro friends tell me.
Gary, could you turn your radio down? We're getting feedback.
Excuse me. More recently, so I understand, The fad is the fashion has changed, and rather darker Negroes are thought to be more attractive companions. Now, I don't suppose within the population it makes much more difference than the fads of blonde and redhead and brunette.
I suppose, for people to change the color of the hair. Although, in the old days, some of the early Negro businesses were devoted to cosmetics for lightening skin and straightening hair.
Of course, the white man, he goes out of his way sometimes in the summer to get a suntan.
Yes, yes, exactly. Nobody is satisfied with what he is. But I don't think that this question of degree of darkness is anything like the problem to the adjustment of the individual Negro in his social environment than it might have been, say, a decade ago.
Gary, any other comments?
No, sir. I think he's answered my question very adequately.
Thank you very much for calling. Night caller.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Gary Einspar from Laramie, Wyoming, student at the University of Wyoming. Let's go now to Anderson, Indiana, listener on WFBM, Mr. Frank Curtis. Good evening, Frank. Your comment, please.
My question is, Russ, many people in the United States feel that the civil rights movement is communistic inspired, and I'd like to ask the doctor, is this so, and why many of these conservative people in the United States feel this way?
Well, you'll have to ask another authority than I about the extent to which left-wing movements may have infiltrated the civil rights movement. It is my impression, and this is only an impression, that the civil rights movement has been singularly free of left extremism. Now, I'm sure that there have been attempts to capture activities from time to time. But if you look at the history of one of the most important Negro protest organizations, the NAACP, you will find, and this has been very well documented in a couple of books by sociologist named C. Wilson Record, you will find that the efforts of the Communist Party to secure control over the NAACP were repeatedly defeated, and the organization protected itself very intelligently, very sophisticated fashion.
Doctor, you're saying that as far as you can determine, the majority of the Negroes involved in the present situation as far as civil rights are concerned are not tied up with the communists, but that there might be a few.
Well, I would be surprised if there weren't a few. But the it's a very remarkable thing in the history of the Negro in the United States that he has been as resistant to communist indoctrination as he has. One would have thought that a subordinate people under conditions of severe discrimination would be ripe for capture by extremist left-wing activities.
Why do you think he resisted?
I really don't know. He was almost a copybook case for the communists. They expected it would be easy to capture large numbers of Negroes, and they certainly tried to capture Negro organizations. Quite possible that the religious element, which is very strong in Negro life, had some effect on this, but it also may be that the communist movement isn't very strong in the United States and never has been. So that not only was the Negro not captured, but the whites weren't captured either. Negroes are not. Communists are not numerous in the United States and never have been.
Frank, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Okay, thank you, Russ.
Good night, sir. Mr. Frank Curtis from Anderson, Indiana, a listener on WFBM. And now out to Denver, Colorado, we have Mrs. Lillian Perkins, and she's listening on KTLN. Good evening, Lillian. Speak right up. You're on night call, ma'am.
How are you, sir?
Fine. Your comment, ma'am.
Yes, I want to ask the doctor, do you really believe, sir, that Negro rioting will continue across the country? And then the next question I want to ask you, do you believe the KK is having a damaging effect on the Negro in the South? Are they making much progress there?
I think I caught the first question. I didn't catch the second.
She's wondering on the second question about the KKK as to the effect that it is having on the Negro in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And we have about 2 minutes, Dr. Romani.
The first question, of course, requires a crystal ball to answer. I would expect that there will be some violence. You don't make major changes of this magnitude without violence occurring. I hope it will be very small indeed. The surprising thing up until the Los Angeles riot was that the violence was as little as it was, not that it was as great as it was. I don't think there has ever been a time when such significant changes were made in a society as peacefully as has occurred so far in the United States. We can only hope that the Los Angeles incident was a flash in the pan and that it won't be repeated.
What about the KKK?
Well, there has been a resurgence of the KKK in some areas. The intention of the KKK is to intimidate the Negro and to intimidate people who are sponsoring the Negro. I don't think the Negro is likely to be intimidated any longer, although in some areas he obviously will have his activity suppressed.
Mrs. Perkins, I want to thank you for calling night call. Our time's just about up.
And thank you, sir.
Good night, ma'am.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you. Mrs. Lillian Perkins from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN. Doctor, I want to thank you for appearing on night call. It's certainly been a pleasure having you here. And again, I will remind the audience that your new book, Transformation of the Negro American, is available, I believe, on the bookstands now, is it not?
Yes, published by Harper & Row.
Again, thank you, Dr. Leonard Broom. Our topic tonight was, Is the American Negro Losing Ground? Tomorrow night on Night Call, Dr. Horace E. Campbell, medical doctor of Denver. Our topic, How You Can Get Safety in Your New Car.
Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station. As a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.